It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Well, Black Friday and Cyber Monday are in the rearview mirror, and I guess that means the holiday shopping season is officially in full swing. For retailers, it's the most crucial season of the year. But as the retail landscape continues to change and once-beloved stores go out of business, there's more pressure than ever on the remaining traditional retailers to get it right. We're going to have a conversation with a retail expert today about what's at stake for these stores and businesses this holiday season. For you, where will you be doing most of your holiday shopping this year? In a store or online? Are there certain retailers that you plan on visiting for sure? What will be bringing you there? Some sort of sale price, selection, something else? Will you be shopping at a store you're worried is going to go out of business? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. The number to call to join the conversation. You can also find us by email at ideas@wpr.org. or tweet us at WPR Mornings. John Talbot is Associate Director at the Center for Education, Research, and Retail at Indiana University's Kelley School of Business. John, thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning, John. Thanks for having me on your show.
The last couple of years have seen some serious upheaval, to say the least, in the retail sector. And yet, one constant remains. The holiday shopping season means big business. Just exactly how crucial is this season for retailers?
Well, for the majority of retailers, and especially when we think of traditional retailers that we visit more frequently during the fourth quarter, it's incredibly important. Many retailers do as much as 40, 50% of their business during this time period. So, you know, the term Black Friday, at least one of the myths associated with it that I think is anchored in some truth is that that was the first day where retailers actually started making money, because for the rest of the year they were paying rent but weren't doing that much business. And it was really during the fourth quarter and holiday season that they finally got into the black in their ledger and became profitable. So that mythical truth remains quite important today, so incredibly important for them.
Well, let's put a dollar figure on this. How much money are American shoppers expected to spend this year?
Oh, I saw numbers something close to $750 billion during this quarter, and expected increases in sales of about 4.5%. Now, that's across all sectors of retail, but it's a big time of year from a shopping perspective.
So we're looking at we're predicting about a 4.5% increase over previous years?
Yep, that's from the National Retail Federation, which is a noted authority in this area. They forecast every year, and that's down about a little bit from last year, where they forecast about a 5.3% increase, I believe. But still, compared to the last 5 years, we're looking at what would appear to be a pretty robust holiday spending season.
And what does that say about the economy as a whole, then?
Well, I looked at some data the other day, John, and, you know, I was just doing some personal investigation for my 401k. And in every midterm election since they started tracking them, the Dow Jones Industrial Average has gone up. So, you know, I think there's a lot of positive things going on in our economy. We have probably the one, you know, sort of headwind, well, probably two headwinds that we see are, you know, the uncertainty around tariffs that we're retailers are having to deal with, and other members of our economy are having to deal with. And then also headwinds around interest rates remain a concern. And so I think there's some I think the season will be good. I think we're looking at what happens next year for many of these retailers.
Mm-hmm. So Black Friday and Cyber Monday have taken place. What did we see in terms of sales for those two big days?
Cyber Monday, biggest day ever, according to Adobe Research, which does a lot of coverage on that. And Amazon reported their largest day ever for Cyber Monday, and they're expected to do probably over 50% of all online sales in the United States. So far, the first 5 days of the shopping season have gotten off to an excellent start for retailers.
John Talbot is Associate Director at the Center for Education, Research, and Retail at Indiana University's Kelly School of Business. You can join our conversation with John Talbot at 800-642-1234. Let us know what your holiday shopping plans include. Are you going to be visiting brick-and-mortar stores, traditional retailers, or are you going to be doing your shopping at home? Or maybe it's a mix of the two. And tell us why. What goes into your decision about where to make your purchases for the holidays? John, as we're in the midst right now of this holiday shopping season, is this are there retailers for whom this is really a do or die situation?
Well, some are already dead. They're just we're seeing the artifacts, what's left of them, and that's Sears and Kmart stores. That financial entity will cease to exist after this year. We may see the names again at some point, but what you're seeing in those stores is just a clearing out of inventory to create as much cash as possible to settle the obligations that the company has right now. So that company's finished. David's Bridal is also in bankruptcy, and the stores that are conducting business are doing so in a wind-down sort of mode, and we won't see them again after this year. And, you know, I think there's some other traditional retailers. I mean, Penny's has been touch and go for a number of years now, and I think they'll make it through the year, and they certainly need a strong holiday season to continue to garner interest from investors. There's always a few, though, that unexpectedly decide at the end of the holiday season that there's no reason to go forward. And some of those I'm not sure we have visibility to at this point.
Well, are there some specialized stores or places that sell only a certain kind of item more at risk here than some of the more traditional retail spaces?
Not that I really see particularly, John. The business around anything to do with electronics, I think, was under tremendous pressure a number of years ago. But, you know, companies like Best Buy have really embraced digital commerce, and their biggest store today is their website. And they're not going anywhere. You know, they're a collaborator now with Amazon in some areas. And so I don't think we, you know, I'm not sure that type matters. Every business needs to be capable in digital commerce today, regardless of the particular type of consumer that they're courting or the products that they sell. And those that are, I think, will continue to enjoy success as they adjust the mix between their brick-and-mortar stores and what they do in terms of digital commerce. And those that don't are going to continue to struggle and probably in the long term won't make it.
All right. We'll continue our conversation with John Talbot in just a moment. John is Associate Director at the Center for Education, Research, and Retail at Indiana University's Kelly School of Business. We're wondering what your shopping plans are. Maybe you've already done all of your holiday shopping. Well, tell us where you did it. Did you go out on Black Friday and brave the crowds and mix with everybody and do your shopping there? Did you do it from the comfort of your own home on your computer or a smart device? What are your plans going forward? Going to be visiting the local mall? And how's that going to work for you? It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Well, it's make or break time for a lot of retailers as the holiday shopping season is in full swing. We're talking about what's at stake here. 800-642-1234, that's the number to call to join our conversation. Where are you going to be doing most of your holiday shopping this year? In a store or online? And are there certain retailers that are must-visits for you? What will it be that's bringing you there? Tradition, sales, selection, something else? And are you worried that some of the stores you like to shop in will be going out of business? 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. John Talbot is Associate Director at the Center for Education, Research, and Retail at Indiana University's Kelley School of Business. John, what strategies are retail stores employing to convince people that they should come out and shop rather than just order items online?
I think that they've gone back to kind of tradition, John, and the tradition, if you think about a store, the purpose of a store historically was to, show goods, display goods, transact. Provide information about products, and then to store inventory. And if you think about stores today, we don't really need them to be warehouses for inventory because they can ship from their e-commerce warehouse and have it at your store the next, or at your door the next day. And we don't really need them to transact because increasingly companies like Amazon are creating transaction-free stores where you simply come in with your app fired up and are able to leave without talking to anybody. And so, to me, what that means is that retailers need to focus on experience in the store. And when you go to a store, the reason that you would be there is because the associates in the store have expert information that help you make a better product decision. Or it's fun that you go in there and there's something that they're doing within the store, some sort of unique product experience or some sort of a unique experience around entertainment in some other form that makes it interesting. Because otherwise, we can just go online and lower our transaction costs and take care of that without having to get in the car and be cold and carry a bunch of bags around. So I think it's really more focused now that brick-and-mortar retailers are focusing on the experience that you have in the store and trying to make it fun or educational or both.
Well, let's talk about that experience a little bit, because one of the things we've seen, particularly here in Wisconsin, but it's actually affecting the entire upper Midwest in a way, when the Bon-Ton Stores group went under, a lot of malls lost major anchor tenants. Between the Boston store and Yonkers, for example, that's a lot of dark space in our shopping malls. What does that do for the experience of holiday shopping?
That certainly makes it more challenging in those malls. and I think what we're seeing in terms of, failures is there's malls or shopping centers today that are doing incredibly well. And then there's some in the middle that maybe when you look at the stores that were anchoring those malls in the first place, they weren't the absolute top of the heap in terms of anchor doors. And, when they failed, they took the mall with them. And so those B malls, I think those are places that are tough right now. And, if you look at the best shopping center managers today, they are working to either unload those B malls and sell them to different entities that can find creative things to do with those large spaces. And they're certainly not building anymore the malls at this point. So mm-hmm. I completely agree with you. When you have a situation like that where an anchor goes dark and there hasn't been sufficient time to find a new use case for those end caps of the mall, if you will, that makes the shopping experience less exciting for consumers. Now, I will say that often the developers for those malls are very creative, take those big spaces and open a Whole Foods or open some other grocer experience or break it up into multiple smaller locations, but that doesn't happen overnight. It takes time.
Holiday sales and discounts tend to be the biggest ways to get customers in the front door, and yet with some of these businesses really struggling just to pay the bills, how viable is that strategy?
Well, in the cases of those that aren't going to be around after Christmas, that strategy is the only strategy they have. It's not a sustainable strategy at all. When you look at retailers that have solid balance sheets today, the
the value items that they've developed for their customers are something that they work on hard throughout the year. They go out and partner with their suppliers and collaborate to build valuable items that they can promote during the holiday shopping period. And they do that and are able to get the type of gross margins that they need to make that sustainable in the long term. But when you see, you know, the stores that are not going to be around, those are essentially just liquidation sales. So they're just trying to convert that inventory into cash, and that's certainly not a sustainable strategy.
John Talbot is Associate Director at the Center for Education, Research, and Retail at Indiana University's Kelley School of Business. We're talking about how important this holiday shopping season is to traditional retailers. A lot of challenges for them in this new shopping landscape where we don't even have to leave our homes to do our holiday shopping. But for many, the experience itself is kind of the goal. You mentioned stores creating experiences to drive traffic. Couldn't some of these strategies that they are used to develop more traffic during the holidays be implemented throughout the year?
Oh, certainly, John. I think that when you look at what they're doing in the fourth quarter, I mean, obviously, I think many of these stores have tested some of these strategies prior to this key holiday season, and then deploy them during fourth quarter. And, you know, to the degree that they work, that might be something that they implement throughout the year. Macy's, for example, has partnered with Facebook to create some pop-up locations where small Facebook vendors that sell their goods through Facebook's app and direct traffic to their websites via Facebook's ability to target consumers very in great detail down to consumers of almost one, if you will. And Facebook has partnered with Macy's to display those goods in several Macy's stores. And I think the rationale there is for Facebook, it gets visibility to their capability as a merchant. And for Macy's, it gets new and exciting stuff into their stores. And so that's a partnership that I could envision going forward in, you know, on a consistent basis where we see the Silicon Valley partnering with traditional retailers in unusual ways to create value for their customers.
And we have to mention that this is the first holiday season in a long time without Toys R Us, and toys, a huge part of holiday shopping. Does this open up an opportunity for other retailers, and how are they going to take advantage of it?
Well, I read Amazon was reporting on their Cyber Monday sales, and a significant component of that was toys. So, yes, it has created a space for competitors. I think a lot of that is going to take place through online sales from various folks, but yeah, anytime a big competitor like that goes by the wayside, it creates opportunities. I'm sure Walmart will also be capitalizing on toy sales during this period. So probably those two probably are the two entities that will most benefit from the demise of Toys R Us.
So, but, you know, you can't take your kids to Amazon and have them sit on Santa's lap and take a picture. I mean,
that's true.
That just not going to happen.
The shopping center can do that, though.
Yeah. So when all the dust settles from the holiday shopping season, what are you going to be looking for in terms of trends and numbers that will tell you how we did?
I'm interested to see what the final ratios are in terms of online versus brick-and-mortar sales. I think there's been so much discussion over the last years about, you know, the demise of brick-and-mortars. And certainly we continue to see fallout from some companies that were not particularly well-positioned. But I think that we're seeing more of an integration between digital and physical retail. And I expect that, though, we'll see growth in e-commerce numbers. I think, you know, the rate of growth will be somewhat slower. And there's going to be more focus on these integrated experiences of using digital mechanisms to enhance the shopping that we undertake in physical stores and vice versa. where the digital experience is enhanced by an ability to create a physical engagement associated with that digital experience in a real-world environment. So I'll be interested to see where that shakes out as we move into the new year.
So what about you? Are you going to be doing your shopping online, or are you planning on visiting the local mall?
You know, John, it's been interesting. I actually was with my daughter several days ago, and she's 12, and we needed to get a winter coat for her, and we chose to go to our local downtown shopping center area, which is a town square. I live in a fairly small town. We went to a local retailer here that does a great job of having associates that are very knowledgeable and always sort of an interesting assortment that's been curated by these folks that have been in business for a long time. For that particular use case,
John, we have to leave it there. I'm sorry, we're out of time. Okay. John Talbot, thanks for joining us this morning. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Stay tuned. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Special education costs have been increasing, but state funding to help public schools offset those expenses has remained stagnant. Meanwhile, special education support for private schools has grown. We'll hear how a number of public school districts are urging state legislators to send more funds their way. And we'll also explore how this could play out with Governor-elect Tony Evers taking the helm of state government. Do you have a child with special needs? What's it like navigating the education system where you live? Do you think the state should provide public schools with more funding for special education? Or do you prefer that the state set that money aside for special education services at private schools? Parents, did you move your child from a public to a private school with help from the state's special needs scholarship program? Why did you decide to make that change? Maybe you took part in special education growing up. What worked and what needed to change? Or are you a teacher at a public school? What effects have you seen with current funding for special education? Share your stories with us at 800-642-1234, ideas@wpr.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Kim Kokel is the executive director of the Wisconsin Rural Schools Alliance, which recently helped a number of school districts write resolutions asking the state for more special education funding. Kim, good morning and welcome to the Morning Show.
Good morning, John. Thanks for having me on.
About 30 school districts in Wisconsin recently passed resolutions asking the state for more special education funding. Kim, what was the impetus for this?
The impetus was that special ed funding has been frozen for almost a decade now, and we're sitting at about 26% funding. And if things don't change by 2020, it'll drop below 25%. And so we felt with the increase that was added in the last budget for special ed voucher funding to 90%, that it was time that we needed to get our public school students up to that same number.
What types of service is this funding supposed to cover?
It's a wide variety of range of things for special needs students, everything from speech and language to occupational therapy, to physical therapy, assistive technology, auditory services, visual impairment, the list goes on and on, cognitive disabilities. It's a wide range.
And these services are mandated under either state or federal law, aren't they?
Correct, under IDEA.
And I guess this isn't the first time I've heard this discussion. Has state and federal funding ever really kept up with what the needs were at the local district level?
Not for a long, long time. I'm sure at one time it maybe did, but it's been a long, long time.
So,
like I said, in the state of Wisconsin, it's been frozen at about, since about 2009. So,
the school districts that you're talking about here that you have worked with on these resolutions, where are they? Are these largely in rural areas?
It's a wide variety, and it's just not our organization. There's a number of other educational organizations that have been working on this process. And so it's a mix of large districts and many of our rural districts. I know from our membership, we've got out of those 30, 15 of them are coming from our membership. And I know there's another group out there right now that are working on resolutions with their school boards.
And why were resolutions chosen as the method to try to accomplish getting funding increases?
Well, I think it's a good approach because you have your school board on board and supporting it at the local level and then pushing it out to your local legislators and then to the statewide legislators. And it just shows almost like, you know, the passage of referendums that at the local level, this is very, very supportive.
Well, let's talk about the Special Needs Scholarship Program. What is it and how does it work?
It's a fairly new program, and basically students that request a special needs voucher to attend a private school receive funding up to 90%. And many of those services are in turn then still provided by the public school. And so it's almost a double whammy in some cases.
And do the schools have the ability then, these private schools, to bill the state for extra costs?
Up to that 90%, yep.
Okay. How does this directly affect public schools that are struggling to afford special education services?
Well, there again, if we were provided that same funding, many of the services that are out there could be better provided for our students. And many of our districts are still providing solid services. Where it impacts is because the funding at the state level has been so low, many of our districts have to take it out of their general fund to offset the cost. And this was an issue that was brought up almost at every Blue Ribbon Commission on school funding hearing there was, that the shortage of special ed funding. And so I know the Blue Ribbon Commission heard it quite often. Out there.
Kim Kokel is the executive director of the Wisconsin Rural Schools Alliance, which recently helped a number of school districts write resolutions asking the state for more special education funding. Parents, do you have a child with special needs? What's it like navigating the education system where you live? Do you think the state should provide public schools with more funding for special education, or do you prefer that the state set that money aside for special ed services at private schools? Parents, did you move your child from a public school to a private school with help from the state's Special Needs Scholarship Program? And why did you take that step? Maybe you took part in special education growing up. What worked? What do you think needs to be changed? And are you a teacher at a public school? What effects have you seen with current funding for special education? And how has that been working in your district? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. The email address is ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Again, that's 800-642-1234. Kim, with the state facing a projected deficit of over $1 billion, and we haven't even seen a budget yet, a new governor coming in, a divided governance, Republicans in the legislature, a Democrat in the state and in the executive office. What's the atmosphere, or what's the feeling like as you advise these school districts on how to ask for more money? What's the feeling that you're actually going to be able to get what you're looking for here?
Well, I think it really comes down to priorities and fairness, and especially when it comes to the special ed position here. When students on the voucher program are getting 90%, and our students in the public system are only getting at about 26% at this point. And as I said before, you know, many of our districts are taking out of their general fund to offset the costs. I know at the Blue Ribbon Commission, there are a number of districts that are taking anywhere from 15 to 20% of their general funds to offset the costs that are not being met at the state by the state level. To continue to provide services that are needed for our special needs students.
Do the private schools, are they mandated to provide special education services, or is this a voluntary thing on their part?
It is a voluntary thing on their part, is my understanding. I'm not probably as well versed on that as others would be, but that is my understanding.
Okay. 800-642-1234. Tell us what you think needs to be done in terms of financing for special education. The funding provided to local school districts not keeping up with the need and hasn't for some time, frozen in 2009 and kind of stuck there. Do you think the state needs to provide more more funding for public schools for special education? It is a mandated service that schools have to provide. How do you think it should be supported? 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Kim Kokel is our guest. He's executive director of the Wisconsin Rural Schools Alliance, which recently helped a number of school districts write resolutions asking for more funding for special education. Let's take a call from Michelle in Milwaukee. Michelle, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us today.
It's nice to be on the phone. My son is a special needs child, and we live in Milwaukee, so he would go to Milwaukee Public Schools. But we keep him as far away from Milwaukee Public as possible because the care that they offered for him in comparison with what they would have given him in Brookfield was huge. So he actually goes to a Brookfield private school.
Okay, and Michelle making the decision there to move her special needs child to a private school. Kim Kokel, are we seeing a lot of that now?
Well, again, I work mostly with rural schools. So out in the rural areas, I don't think that's probably as prevalent as it probably is in the urban areas.
Mm-hmm. And how much
And there again, I guess I would like to, you know, make a comment too that, you know, if Milwaukee Public School was getting the same 90% that the Brookfield Private was getting, the same services could probably be provided.
How much total money are we talking about here to get the public schools in Wisconsin funded at 90% for special needs? Do you have an idea of how much we're talking about?
Well, I know right now to get us up to that 60% that is in the DPI projected budget moving forward, I believe it's about a $600 million investment.
Okay, $600 million. I believe that's the number that Tony Evers was talking about during the campaign. That's a pretty good sized chunk of money. We'll continue our conversation and talk about how that might work with Kim Kokel, executive director of the Wisconsin Rural Schools Alliance. Our conversation about funding for special education in Wisconsin continues in just a moment. I'm John Munson. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay with us. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Local public school districts are asking for more state funding to support special education programs. Funding hasn't kept pace with costs, and schools are struggling to maintain programs for children with special needs. Do you have a child with special needs? What's it like navigating the education system where you live? Do you think the state should provide public schools with more funding for special education? Or would you prefer that the state set that money aside for special education services at private schools? Parents, did you move your child from a public school to a private school with help from the state's Special Needs Scholarship Program? And why did you decide to take that step? Maybe you took part in special ed growing up. What worked? What needs to change? And are you a teacher in one of our public schools? What effects have you seen from current funding for special education? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas at WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Three ways to get in touch and join the conversation this morning. Kim Kokel is the executive director of the Wisconsin Rural Schools Alliance, and he's here with us to talk about this issue. So, Kim, without enough funding from the state to support special education services, public school districts are having to dip into their general fund to pay for them, or are they cutting some special ed services altogether? And or a third option, are they passing the costs on to taxpayers? Is that one of the things we saw in some of these school referenda that were passed in the most recent election?
Well, as we talked earlier, many of the services required for special ed are, mandated under IDEA. So, those are services that are difficult to cut and are very much needed for many of our students. Normally, as you said, it's coming out of our general fund to offset those costs. And yes, part of that is a makeup in some of, probably not all the referendums, but many of the referendums that were just passed were operational referendums. Just to kind of keep the doors open and keep things running as normal. It definitely does have an impact.
Are schools being forced to make choices about other programs in order to provide these mandated special ed services?
I would say in some cases, yes. I can't speak for every district because I'm not right there, but from my past experience, I know that is definitely something that does happen.
You mentioned 2009 as kind of being the year that we really started to notice this problem. Is that when the Wisconsin Rural Schools Alliance really started swinging into action on this?
We started in about 2012, just because we felt there wasn't a voice for our rural schools. And so there were a group of folks that got together and formed our organization back in 2012. But these are definitely issues that we're constantly looking at and how they're impacting our rural schools, and not just rural schools, but all public schools.
Rural portions of Wisconsin, mostly represented by the majority party in the state legislature, for a number of years now, what kind of reception have you gotten from state legislators when you've said, hey, we're not keeping up here with special ed funding, this needs to get fixed? What's been the response?
I would say it's been mixed. They listen, but a lot of times it depends on what comes down from the higher-ups in the party. Many times everybody follows the party line. But I would say in the last couple of years here now, things have gotten, they are understanding the needs that we have. And, there was some improvement in this last biennial budget for educational funding. And hopefully that will continue moving forward.
Let's take another call here. Stefan is with us in Racine. Stefan, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I work for the Department of Children and Families, and I'm part of a multi-department inclusion special needs work group that includes DCF, DHS, DPI, and other stakeholders. And we're trying to gather data on the number of special needs children in the state of Wisconsin, special needs families, and we're finding that extremely difficult to get accurate numbers. And I'm wondering if the guests might have any insight for our group in how we can gather data, especially in the rural areas.
Kim Kunkel?
I believe Stefan said that you're working with DPI. They should have some of those numbers that you need. It's just like anything. I'm not sure if they're going to be 100% accurate, but I would think that DPI would be able to assist you with getting, the number of students that have IEPs and things like that out in the state, in the public system.
Yeah, sure. And we wouldn't have any data on the private schools, really, would we?
Do we collect that?
Okay. Well, somebody will. Is increased funding the only way to improve or to meet the challenges you see in our state special education system?
I think one of the areas that I know we run into, with some of our special, additional mental health services, and what we're finding is there's such a shortage of mental health workers also out there, that sometimes it is very difficult for us to find consistent services in the mental health area. Mm-hmm. So if we could find a way to increase our mental health workers, that would also help. Provide some of the services that are needed out there, especially in the rural areas and in some of the heavy urban areas, too. We know there's also a shortage there for mental health workers.
Well, on the campaign trail, Democratic Governor-elect Tony Evers said he wanted to raise the reimbursement rate to 60% in the 2019-2021 state budget, which his administration will be writing. Are you hopeful that he'll come through on that?
We're very hopeful, and that's part of the reason for the resolution, is to show our support for that.
And, he's working with a legislature from the opposition party. They've already signaled that, they intend to hold the line on things like spending and taxation. What do you think is going to happen when the governor's budget hits the Joint Finance Committee?
It'll be an interesting discussion. And again, I think they need to look at what is fair for all students too. If you're providing 90% for students that are at attending private schools, our public school students should be receiving the same in when it comes to special needs funding.
So, what for all of Wisconsin's public schools to have quality special education, don't we really need to have something closer to 100% funding than 60%?
100% would be great.
One of the issues in education, the education debates over the last couple of decades has been unfunded mandates. This is an example of one of them, wouldn't it be?
Yep, in many cases it is. But it's also a needed program, too. To make sure services are provided for all of our students so they can, receive that free and appropriate education.
What advice do you have for parents or teachers who want to advocate for the children in their lives who need these special education services? What should they do? What sort of resources are there out there that would help them do this?
Well, I think a couple. Number one, talk with your school board, local school board, if they haven't passed a resolution, to do so. And then to start talking to your local legislators and say, this is an important piece, for the budget here, and this is something that's needed. And show how it is negatively impacting our school districts and our students.
And do you have like a website you could point us to where parents could find out more about how the funding for special education works in the state of Wisconsin and maybe get into some details that might help them? Or should they just call their school board office and see if they can give them this information?
Well, I think, I would direct them to go to the DPI Special Ed website. There's a lot of really good information there.
Okay. Kim Kokel, thank you for joining us this morning. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having us. Appreciate it.
Kim Kokel is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Rural Schools Alliance, which recently helped a number of school districts write resolutions asking the state for more special education funding. I'm John Munson. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.